The Ask Theory podcast shines the spotlight on Pinoy scientists from various scientific disciplines. Listen to some of the country's best scientific minds as they explain what they do in simple terms and share fascinating stories of how they got into science, the incredible things they've learned about the world around us, and so much more. Ryan John Pascual completed his master's degree in aquaculture at Ghent University. He is currently pursuing a master's degree on sustainable leadership and governance at De La Salle University, Dasmariñas, while working as a project technical specialist on special concerns at the National Academy of Science and Technology. Hi, Ryan. Welcome to the Ask Theory podcast.
Hi, Mikael. Thanks for having me tonight.
Yeah, thank you, Ren, for making time. So, yung interview namin ni Ryan, we're recording this late at night kasi we both had busy days. So, especially si Ryan. And he'll actually tell you a little more about what he does. But before we get into that, let's get started on how you fell in love with science. Kwento mo sa amin yung love story mo with science.
Really, it's, do you want to call it a love story? I'm really not sure about that. But maybe back to my childhood, I can relate that with when people ask me about my ambition. Mm-hmm. I usually answer, I want to be a doctor or a teacher. But I just wrote becoming a scientist once. But back then, I only knew little about what scientists do. So maybe I can attribute that with Sineskwela. It was really the heyday of that program during that time.
Yeah.
But going to your question, seriously, I think it's the process, the scientific process, and finding the explanation of a phenomenon or something unknown that's really interesting and that really got my interest into science. It's really an exciting process, and I think every researcher aspires to contribute to the body of knowledge through their research findings. So going to the unknown, really, it's really exciting.
And I'm sure a lot would agree, especially yung mga science enthusiasts would agree that it's that sense of having your questions and then having those questions answered, you know, finding the answers through the process on your own or with other people, which we'll be talking about in a bit. But take us through your professional journey or your journey right now as you're continuing to grow in your role as a scientist and someone who also dabbles in leadership, in sustainable leadership. So tell us a little more about what you do.
Well, at my job now, being called as a scientist really is a different level. So mm-hmm. I prefer to be called a science practitioner.
Okay.
So in terms of my journey, I think it's really a peculiar journey. I took up biology for my college degree and I went with a plant biology or botany major option. After that, I wanted to try research on model organisms. It's really a different field. And that was in graduate school. And eventually, that brought me to aquaculture research. And since then, I was really fascinated with aquatic model organisms. So model organisms are test subjects that are preferred by scientists since they can be grown into the laboratory and they can easily be cultured. So what brought me to aquaculture, I think, is the full scholarship opportunity that I got from VLIR UOS in Belgium. That was really a driving force for me in taking up the aquaculture program. And definitely, part of that was my interest with aquatic model organisms. And some may say that I'm really jumping across different fields, like from plants going to animals, but I think it was really an interesting experience. And after completing my master's degree, I returned to the country. And that was only a few months, I think, before the pandemic. So around 3-4 months before the pandemic. And that is when I started as a science research specialist, now called as project technical specialist in the DOST, specifically the National Academy of Science and Technology. So currently, I am on my third year as a contract of service employee of NAS. And it's quite odd that I really started working in that agency 1 week before the lockdowns were imposed.
Yeah.
So to be honest, I haven't done wet lab activities, the usual things that people think of scientists doing in the lab in the past 3 years. But I'm glad to have done or have the opportunity to work with our respected academicians and national scientists and support them in their various science policy endeavors.
I see. Okay. I think for a lot of the people who've listened to this podcast, they know that more often than not, the path towards science isn't as straightforward as you think. Like you start out being interested in one thing, maybe it's space, maybe it's dinosaurs, but you know, when you grow up, you end up pursuing a totally different thing because you kind of realize that most of your questions revolve around that area. It is indeed interesting that you're working at NAST and you started right before the pandemic. But tell us a little more about what you mainly do day-to-day, on a day-to-day basis, and maybe share with us some of the things that you've learned during the course of your work.
So at NAST, I've been organizing activities for the Health Sciences Division, particularly their advisory activities. So the National Academy of Science and Technology is the highest scientific advisory and recognition body in the country. So for their science advisory activities, we conduct fora, science information sessions, legislative fora, and panel discussions, as well as roundtable discussions on various relevant and timely topics. And our academicians, the members of the National Academy of Science and Technology, they prepare policy recommendations from those activities. So as part of the secretariat, our task includes organizing the activity as well as sending their recommendations to the concerned government agencies. So that's basically the gist of my work at NAST. Right now, we're doing the Special Concerns Program. So those involve specific topics, a wide range of topics on various concerns that aims to produce relevant, science-based, and foresight-driven policy recommendations for our executive and legislative branches of government.
That's interesting. Can you tell us a little more about what foresight-driven means? And if you can share like an example of a specific thing you've worked on.
So when I started at NAST in 2020, yes, that's 3 years.
Yes.
3 years ago, yeah. NAST was still developing the Pagtanaw 2050. So if you haven't heard about Pagtanaw 2050, that is the 30-year foresight, which is the first of its kind in the country, and that is commissioned by the DOST through the NAST. So the Department of Science and Technology wants to develop a 30-year roadmap that would lead us to a progressive, or rather prosperous, archipelagic and maritime nation. So that's the goal of Pagtanaw 2050. And foresight, so when we talk about foresight, that's anticipating the future. We want to be prepared. So foresight is a planning method, basically, and that will help us to prepare some policies as well as design programs that will make us resilient as well as prepared in the future and in the next 30 years. So to reach that goal, so NAST also wants to prepare the scientific human capital of the country. And that's part of Pagtanaw 2050.
Very interesting. I think I've read about Pagtanaw 2050. I saw it on social media. It's very interesting. I think some of our listeners who might want to learn more about it, you can search for Pagtanaw. I think it was recently shared with the public, like parang a few months ago lang or ano, like napag-uusapan siya. So you can easily find it on social media.
If I may add, actually DOST is working right now to institutionalize foresight within its system. So for the listeners, I think they can visit the NAST website, if I may.
Yes.
www.nast.dost.gov.ph. to download Pagtanaw 2050. So it's also available online. So it's quite a thick book, around 360 plus pages, but it's interesting to read.
Yeah, and I bet now if you're planning like a roadmap that spans decades, it would be a thick read. I think maraming kailangang gawin, but it's very exciting. So yeah, for our listeners who want to check that out, you can go to the website that he mentioned. And we'll put that in the show notes as well. Okay. Now, interesting for me yung fact that you're taking a master's degree on sustainable leadership and governance. So maybe tell us a little more about what sustainable leadership means exactly and why it's important.
So what I actually told you earlier is that I have a master's degree in aquaculture. Mm-hmm. So that's quite another jump again. So from plants to animals, then to aquaculture, then to sustainable leadership. So that's really venturing to the social sciences already.
Uh-huh.
So, but going back to aquaculture, would you believe that we have some accounting modules in our master's program?
Hmm.
So I actually thought that it would be too technical before, but we also have some management training also. And I think that really encouraged me to pursue sustainable leadership training at De La Salle Desmariñas. So for me, sustainable leadership is a management approach that promotes collaborative action as well as the incorporation of sustainable development practices for the continuous transformation and development of communities. So we have the SDGs, right?
Mm-hmm.
In, I think, 7 years. Some say that we're not going to achieve the targets or probably achieve only few.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really the right direction to have a sustainable lifestyle probably or sustainable communities.
Yeah, oh nga. Yeah, I think it's yung the concept of the SDGs is a familiar concept for most people, especially yung about climate, about poverty, basically the things that we've been worrying about, the problems that we've been experiencing in the Philippines for a long time. And I do remember nga that the time frame is 2030. So yes, I think you have about 7 years. Maiba tayo. Actually, follow-up question. How do you feel about it when people say na, oh, we're not gonna achieve the goals? And but what's your opinion ba? How close are we exactly? If you're allowed to share your opinion about that.
We recently hosted the UNG event, and that really talked about the progress of ASEAN countries in terms of the SDGs. And for the Philippines, our government agencies are working hard to achieve the goals. However, there are a lot of pressing issues in our country. And I think what we really need are interventions which should accelerate our action towards achieving the SDGs. And as part of the DOST family, we really suggest science and technology-based interventions. So we need some catalysts probably to achieve those goals.
I agree, especially in sabihin bias, because I mostly talk to scientists and dabble in communicating science. But I do agree that we need more science-based solutions, more technologies. We need to empower our citizens and implement effective systems that make use of technological developments so that we can kind of like move forward with the goals that we want to achieve. And I think one of the ways where, or one of the avenues where we can apply that is agritourism. But maybe tell us a little more, and I think this is more of your expertise then. Like, what exactly does agritourism mean? How does it work? And how does it benefit the stakeholders?
So basically, this topic comes into picture because this is one of my recent research interests in sustainable leadership and governance. So agritourism involves agricultural-based operations that brings visitors to farms as well as fish ponds. And agritourism provides additional income to the farmers. So basically, your tourists will pay in terms of the food they will eat, or they can also stay within the vicinity of the farm. So it can also provide a learning platform for tourists as well as city dwellers on farm life. And hopefully this will be an avenue for people to be more aware of the challenges experienced by our farmers and fisher folk. So food security is a big concern now, and we need to support our farmers. So agritourism is a way to go. And I think we have a recent legislation about this one. So one of the topics that I chose in my environmental management class is to advocate for a policy that will be focused on enforcement of hand washing stations in agritourism enterprises.
Uh-huh.
So especially those with amenities that offer tourist and farm animal interaction. So I believe we just come from the COVID-19 pandemic, and that's a zoonotic disease or something that's transmitted from animals to humans.
Yes.
So the close interaction between animals and humans in agritourism especially on farm animal attractions, so that can pose a health threat, especially to children. So when children approach animals, they would touch or feed them, but their hands can go to their mouth or mm-hmm. they can touch their eyes. So those are entry points yes. for potential pathogens, which can really lead to sickness. And that's the health threat of those animal, farm animals.
Mm-hmm. And I like that you mentioned that because before the pandemic, let's be honest and, you know, say that not a lot of people probably thought about hand washing that much. Parang, for, yeah, it's a thing that you do before you eat or after you use the bathroom, but it's not really something that's top of mind, you know. But ever since the pandemic, we've been more conscious about keeping our hands clean, being careful about transmitting diseases, basically taking consideration of one factor and sort of like thinking about how it affects the whole, which is kind of like what the One Health concept is all about. Here on the podcast, we've talked about the One Health concept, the One Health idea in multiple episodes. And I've talked to many fellows of the Next Generation One Health Fellowship. And I think I haven't mentioned yet that you are also a fellow of the Next Generation One Health Fellowship. So tell us a little about your experience. Like, how did you hear about the Next Generation One Health Fellowship? What was the catalyst that made you decide to join? Na parang, ay, ang ganda nito, sali ako dito. So what got you on board?
So basically, One Health is an approach in preventing the next pandemic. Mm-hmm. So COVID-19 was really an inspiration that drove me that we need to do something to prevent the next pandemic to happen. So I was searching on social media and on the internet about possible opportunities on One Health. I think research, I'm going for research opportunities as well as internships that would give me additional experience on One Health. And by some luck, I found the Next Generation One Health Fellowship at that mm-hmm. time was accepting applicants. And possibly the algorithm brought me to the opportunity.
Yeah. But out of all the possible like projects or fellowships that you could have participated in, what was it about the fellowship, this particular fellowship program that made you say, hey, this is awesome, I think I'll join?
So what I read during that time is that they will give lectures as well as online course about One Health. And during the program, they really offered a number of modules on One Health, and that is now available online for mm-hmm. all. I think the One Health yes. online course of St. Luke's or the NGA, the Next Generation One Health Philippines online course is already available online. And during the program, we also have a face-to-face workshop where we encountered or met with the other fellows. So we are 15 in the group. And during that workshop, we had the opportunity to present our research interests that gave us the opportunity to form our research groups now. So our research group now, these groups are working on our research proposals that are currently being reviewed by the program as well as the Ethics Review Board of St. Luke's College of Medicine. And so for our group, we will going to be studying the knowledge, attitudes, and practices as well as lived experiences and aspiration of communities in terms of One Health approach. So basically, the program is about learning the concept, the theories, as well as the different aspects of One Health. So you go for research and development, for policy, for governance, and actually going with the sociological background of One Health. So they really give a wonderful overview of One Health for interested fellows.
Yeah. So what would you say is the most important thing that you learned from the fellowship?
So I think, as mentioned earlier, they really give a wonderful overview of One Health.
Yeah.
And they really emphasize about its connection with wildlife trade. And for me, mm-hmm. one of the important aspects of the fellowship is their emphasis on the social aspects of One Health. So we know in theory or in nature that our health, the human health and the environment, as well as animal health, they are all interconnected. So it is also important in understanding that our stakeholders, so everyone, the citizens, as well as wildlife traders, understanding their experiences and understanding how can they contribute to One Health and advancing One Health in the country. So that goes the same with our leaders. So we want to know how can they help on advancing One Health.
And you've answered this a bit in the previous question, but I also want to ask specifically, how do you think being part of the fellowship helped you on your science track or as a scientist?
Well, as mentioned earlier, it's balancing your technical side. So you're from the natural sciences and complementing it with the social sciences. And especially for me, I came from a natural sciences side. Then now I'm learning more about social science methods as well as research practices or research tools that can be used in understanding stakeholders. So it's really using your technical knowledge and understanding how people will use it or how people can use it in terms of policy recommendations and possible changes on their lifestyle as well as practices in a community. If there is a report of wildlife trade, we can possibly understand or learn what's the reason behind that and inform the community about the possible threats that this practice could bring.
That's and you know, I like how that also emphasizes like there's the social aspect of practicing science. No, you always have to consider how the science will benefit the people, how people or the presence of people affect the science, basically. And these things that involve taking the different parts of the whole and looking at it from a broader perspective, much like reflective of the One Health concept itself. So I think your project is very, very interesting. And right now, like you said, you're still sort of like in the process of completing it and having it reviewed. And maybe when it's concluded, you can share your results with us, with the listeners. Maybe your team can be on the podcast and talk about it a little bit.
Yes, definitely. Our team will be glad. But right now, we're still planning the whole research as well as waiting for the ethics review of the proposal. So hopefully, probably next year, we can share our results with your listeners.
That definitely sounds exciting. But what if some of our listeners wanted to contact you for, if they wanted to ask questions or maybe work with you, what are the best ways to reach out to you?
I think they can reach me through my social media handle, Twitter, IG, or LinkedIn. That would be great. At Ryan John Pascual. So I would really try to answer your questions or their questions regarding the session, this session, as well as the topics that we have discussed. So I'm also a founding member of the Philippine Association of Belgian University Scholars. And I take this opportunity to promote the scholarship opportunities in Belgium. So if they are interested to go to or to explore opportunities in Belgium through the Lear UOS scholarship, so our alumni organization would be glad to assist them. So they can just visit our social media channels. So that's at BE Scholars for PH or B Scholars for PH.
All right. This was a great conversation, but what's one thing or one takeaway, maybe one lesson that you'd like our listeners to learn after listening to you on this podcast? Or maybe some final words of encouragement, a final message. Is there anything you'd want to share with our listeners?
Well, we talk about skipping fields or jumping across fields, for my science career. I think sometimes you need to grab the opportunity and make the most out of it. And you really don't know what will happen next. But just remember that in everything you do, you would aim how would your research or your project would affect the community. I think that's one of the things that I would really like to share with the listeners today. That it's like the question, para kanino ka bumabangon? Right? So it's not for your research alone. So it's for the community that you will serve.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be on the podcast. We learned a lot from your insights, and I'm looking forward to talking to you and your team again next year when you have more findings to share. So once again, thank you. And if there's anything I can help you with or we can help you with on the podcast, don't be afraid to, or don't hesitate to reach out.
Thank you, Mikael, for this opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. So yeah, take care, stay safe, keep in touch, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Ask Theory. Follow Flip Science on Facebook, at Flip Science PH on Twitter, and at Flip Facts on Instagram. And check out our official Shopee store if you want to get copies of our books, Historiang Scientifico and Science Scramble. Stay curious!